University. I'm outside the Belly Up Tavern in Solana Beach, California, chatting with Duncan Sheik. How's it going, Duncan?
It's going great.
Good. It's been a pretty exciting year for you overall with the musical Spring Awakening, and just outside of what most people do know you for, which is your singer-songwriting work. Would you agree?
Yeah, it's been an amazing year. You know, we never thought that this was going to happen with Spring Awakening. You know, as of June of last year, you know, it was kind of like we didn't even know if we were going to Broadway at all. Amongst many other things, it was a dream come true to have this happen for the show. So no complaints.
Yeah, for sure. I remember previews actually last year. I was in New York at the time, and there was a lot of buzz, though. It was really cool and all that.
There was a lot of buzz, but at the show, you know, to be honest with you, before the opening night, it was losing a huge amount of money every week because, you know, we don't have any stars and the material is pretty racy and pretty different and kind of, you know, I think it scared a lot of the regular Broadway theater going audience. So it took a while for them to kind of come around and embrace the show. But when they did in a big way. So it's great.
Well, yeah. And just looking at the Broadway audience, you weren't actually a typical member of the Broadway audience prior to working on this play, right?
No, I wasn't. I mean, I had done a lot of musical theater when I was a young kid. I was tangentially involved in the theater in kind of high school and college. Then I'd play guitar for Godspell or whatever. Yeah. But I wasn't, you know, fully immersed in it. And I basically wanted to go out and make records and tour and, you know, work in the quote-unquote normal music business. And so, when I started working on Spring Awakening in 99, it did take me a while to come around to kind of, you know, fully embrace this idea of musical theater. You know, even though we were breaking boundaries and trying to do things in a different way, there are certain aspects of the theater that you're never going to change, you know? And so that I had to kind of come to grips with that and understand what those things were and then and make friends with them in a way. Once I stopped being such a brat, then things kind of got better.
Well, in looking at the play, I mean, it definitely deals with subject matter that isn't typical Broadway fare, I guess, or at least maybe it'd be more behind the scenes Broadway fare than really.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah,
in front of it. So what do you think it is about it that Broadway really liked?
Well, there's a few things. I think we were fortunate in the sense of the timing of when the show debuted, because I think there was a feeling within certainly New York and LA, but also the country as a whole, that, you know, the kind of the hypocrisy of our administration and this idea of kind of family values and espousing, you know, these kind of very specific kind of social norms, people were tired of that. People were tired of Ted Haggard and Mark Foley like telling them what to do and how to be and how to live. And so, you know, Spring Awakening is a show that very much deals with the fact that human beings and adolescent human beings are sexual beings, and that can either be handled in a really kind of negative, inappropriate way, or it can be handled kind of with concern and sensitivity and care. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the case of Spring Awakening, it's the former, and a lot of tragedy comes from that. And so I think it is, to some degree, a real cautionary tale.
When you look at Spring Awakenings again, and in the context of your entire catalog and what you've done, are you surprised that you've evolved in this way and you've gone this direction?
Well, I mean, I'm not surprised now because I've been working on it for 8-9 years. Yeah. I mean, we were surprised that things worked out the way they did and the show was as successful as it has been. But, you know, I think I basically by about 2 years ago, I understood that, in fact, a big part of my life was going to be writing music for the theater. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to be. And now it seems like it will be. And we have, you know, as well as Spring Awakening, Stephen and I have two other shows that are, you know, ready to kind of debut next year. I'm, incredibly excited about getting those things on their feet. And I'll still make records and tour as a solo artist in some fashion. But I think that making music for the theater is always going to be a really important thing from here on out for me.
So are you writing lyrics as well as composing the score?
No. Stephen is the lyricist and the book writer, and he hands me the lyrics or emails them to me or however I get them, and then I write music to them.
So what has that been like for you? Because you have been a person who does write your own lyrics.
Yeah, certainly I do that for my own records. But I find writing lyrics a pretty painstaking process. And so it's great to have somebody as prolific as Stephen around, because it allows me to just come up with much more material than I would otherwise. You know, I mean, I write music, not that I write it quickly, but I write a lot of music, and it comes naturally to me. And it was always very organic to just like receive these lyrics from him and then set them to music.
What are the challenges that you find with composing a score? Do you and Stephen ever talk and he goes, well, you know what, this is not what I was really thinking, and then you kind of go back?
No, we don't. It's our collaboration is bizarre in the sense that he writes a lyric kind of in his room by himself, and then he sends it to me, and then I write some music to that lyric, and then I record it, and I send him an MP3 of the recording, and then we're like, we're done. It's collaborative, but we're collaborating in two different rooms.
Do you have any formal training, or have you sought any further education as far as composing for the theater at this point?
No. I mean, do I have formal training? You know, my training is really is the fact that I've produced records and recorded albums for the past 10 years and been on tour in, you know, rock bands and whatever in Carnation for the past 10 years. And you know, prior to that, I was in school and I studied a lot of music theory. My sight reading is terrible. But my training has all been kind of, you know, training on the job, as it were.
Right.
And certainly, you know, in terms of making music for theater, it was just my intuitive approach to it that, you know, I'm not, in other words, I didn't necessarily want to follow in the footsteps of any other specific composer. We definitely wanted to kind of forge our own path.
And just be more unique in that sense.
Sure. I mean, Spring Awakening is an eccentric piece to begin with, and I think that you need to honor that eccentricity and that kind of sense of individuality by making sure that the music is also a very individual voice.
Is it fun for you to deal with all the different instrumentation, or do you find that...
Yeah, I do. I mean, I worked with Simon Hale, as I always do, who's my British string arranger. You know, Simon is amazing. I kind of did the orchestrations for the band, and then he does the kind of the string arrangements. So it's, you know, it's a very long-standing and very wonderful partnership that I have with him, just on a purely musical level. Mm-hmm. I'm blessed to have people like Stephen and Simon, you know, and to be able to work with these, you know, what I consider to be real geniuses.
What equipment do you use for your recordings in general and for this?
I have a proper studio in New York, and I have a really cool Calrec console from the BBC that I got, you know, about 7 or 8 years ago, and it was a broadcast board that they would do classical music. They broadcast classical music from the Maida Vale studios in London, and so I have this really cool console and 900 guitars and vintage keyboards and you name it. I mean, it's, you know, there in my house. Old microphones, new microphones, old mic pre's, new mic pre's. You know, I'm kind of a gearhead, so.
Just have a lot of things.
A lot of stuff, yeah.
A lot of stuff. All right, and overall, a lot of your fans, one thing they respect about you is that you've kind of forged your own way, really. Like, I mean, you had Barely Breathing, of course, the big hit, and then you made Humming, and then you went and made Phantom Moon,
yeah,
which was totally against
all
of that. So
yes.
How have you just been able to maintain recording music that you respect and that you enjoy doing, at least seemingly enjoy doing, and still kind of stay afloat?
and make a living?
Yeah, seriously.
You know, it was very hard making records that, you know, that weren't gold records, and touring, and, you know, I wasn't playing in huge venues, and, you know, I've always kind of played clubs and small theaters, and it's tricky to make money at that level. I just kind of had to persevere through through, you know, what was 5 or 6 years of really frustration. It really wasn't until Spring Awakening, kind of, we knew that it was going to be a real success, that I kind of felt a certain amount of vindication that all the hard work was going to pay off. I certainly feel like now it has.
Yeah. What are your thoughts when you look at the current state of music? And a lot of people consider the label a machine at this point. And I know you have produced artists kind of on your own. So just, do you have any overall thoughts on it?
Yeah. Well, look, I think the music business is kind of going through enormous growing pains, and it's having to reorganize itself along very different lines than it thought it was going to, and it's having to really seriously pay attention to the digital revolution in a way that it was not prepared to do even 2-3 years ago. In a sense, I think it's healthy, because I think that there was a lot of kind of stagnancy in the business during the kind of late 90s and the early noughties. You know, music business had become, certainly the major labels had become kind of very stale in the music that they were choosing to kind of market and create and promote, and it just wasn't that interesting to me. And I know there was a long stretch of time where I didn't bother going into the record store and buying anything, because it just wasn't a lot out there for me to buy. Certainly not mainstream record stores. Mm-hmm. I would, you know, seeking stuff out in the nooks and crannies, you know. But now I think, you know, certainly in large part because of iTunes, but also just because of the nature of audiences and people being able to seek out and find different kinds of music, I see that there's a lot of cool stuff that's kind of breaking through and having a real vital life, and, you know, more obscure bands that, you know, never would have seen the light of day 6-7 years ago, whether it's Arcade Fire or Regina Spektor or Sufjan mm-hmm. Stevens, or, you know, there's a list. But these are not artists that would have, I think, found success in the music business of 7 or 8 years ago, and now they have, and that's healthy, I think.
And looking at the lyrics that you write, and you look at White Limousine, which is your last full-length, full original album that you did, a song like Red Stripes, for example, where you deal with probably, I guess, your frustrations with the current state of things, is that something that you seem to care to write about more than...
Well, I mean, you know, the White Limousine had kind of 2 or 3 more political songs, things that had maybe a bit of either bite or satire, and, you know, they kind of dealt with things other than your normal kind of tortured, you know, unrequited love song, you know, scenario. And I just think that was a natural extension of the things that I was thinking about and things that were important to me during the past few years. I mean, you know, after September 11th, even though I live 15 blocks away from Ground Zero, I didn't feel like it was my place at all to comment on that musically or otherwise. But I think that, you know, so much has happened in this administration, and that I felt like I did have something to say finally after a while, and that it in fact would be irresponsible to not say it. So I said it.
A lot of people do shy away from it, though.
Yeah.
Depending on what their job is or profession.
Sure.
So what was the first album that you owned?
Well, it actually was Yes, Fragile, which my mom had a boyfriend who was a guitar player who got it for me from, like, my 6th birthday. So that's actually a pretty good record to have started with. I didn't understand all of it, that's for sure, but there was a lot of the songs that I liked a lot.
What about, do you remember the first one you actually bought yourself and had
it? I think the first one I bought myself was, like, Kiss Alive 2 or something, you know, some scary like that. Or it might have been Kiss Alive 1, I don't know. But, you know, I was 6, so you gotta give me a break.
Yeah. And what was the first concert that you attended?
It was Van Halen, Women and Children first tour, their third album. It was exciting for me at the time.
Sure. Do you remember what the first song was you actually learned to play on your own?
I guess it was probably, like, Back in Black or something along those lines, you know. It was when I was in kind of elementary school, and I was in a band that was called Slightly Off, and we played, like, all this kind of early 80s rock music, so it was all those things I mentioned, plus Def Leppard, and, you know, it was really horrible. But anyway.
So was it later until you were like a teen that...
Well, then I got kind of back into prog rock music. Or I had always kind of been... I was always interested in it, but then I got more into things like Yes and Genesis and King Crimson. And then that kind of like brought me into my more like real stylized Anglophile music that I still listen to. Things like David Sylvian and Talk Talk and The Blue Nile and, you know... Of course, more recently, Elbow, and of course Radiohead, and The Doves, and I guess in a way my taste in music hasn't really changed since I was like 20, you know, in my early 20s, and I'm actually happy about that.
That was a good thing. All right, well, thanks a lot, Duncan.
Thank you.
Good luck with your show tonight.
Thank you. Cheers.
Right.
Sanctified.